My text is found in 2 Samuel, chapter 23, page 287, if you would like to follow along as I read for us all. And I will begin reading at verse 13. And three of the 30 chief men went down and came about harvest time to David at the cave of Adullam, when a band of Philistines was encamped in the valley of Rephaim. David was then in the stronghold, and the garrison of the Philistines was then at Bethlehem. And David said longingly, "Oh, that someone would give me water to drink from the well of Bethlehem, which is by the gate." Then the three mighty men broke through the camp of the Philistines, drew water out of the well of Bethlehem, which was by the gate, and took and brought it to David, but he would not drink of it. He poured it out to the Lord and said, "Far be it from me, O Lord, that I should do this. Shall I drink the blood of the men who went at risk of their lives?" Therefore he would not drink it. These things did the three mighty men. Let us pray silently for a moment. In Christ's name, amen. Anne Tyler, in a very appealing novel that she penned, tells the story of a man named Ezra. Ezra worked in a restaurant. And after some years of working in this restaurant, the owner of the restaurant, a Mrs. Scarlatti, just turned the restaurant over to him. And Ezra decided that he was going to create a menu in that restaurant of all of the recipes that people think about when they think of home and childhood and all of the good things they had to eat back there. And so he called it the Homesick Restaurant. And that's the title of Ann Tyler's novel, Dinner at the Homesick Restaurant. You could get all of the food there that you long for in memory's eye. And it is something of that scene that we hit upon in this story that I just read in your hearing. David, in the autumn years of his life, is on the run, a veteran of many battles and many wars, and he comes to a campfire in a cave near Bethlehem, his hometown. And as he looked into the fading embers of the campfire in the circle of light and safety, he thinks about some water he enjoyed so much from the well at the gate in Bethlehem. And he began to think out loud, which is a dangerous thing for a leader to do, because when you think out loud, it can become instant policy. And he said, "Oh, that I could have once again some of the cool, refreshing water from the well at the gate in Bethlehem." And from the circle of safety and the light of the fire, three of his men stepped back into the darkness and gathered their weapons and fought their way through the Philistine lines to Bethlehem and fought their way back in order to bring the king some of the water that he had longed to have. And when they gave it to him, it had to be a moment of poignant emotion for David, for he instantly realized that their gift, at risk of life and limb, was a gift worthy only of God, not of a mere man. So he poured the water on the ground. And he said, "I cannot do this. This is the blood of men who have risked their lives." So he poured it on the ground as an offering to God. Now these men were heroes. Webster defines hero as one who shows great courage. Courage is defined as mental or moral strength to persevere, to withstand danger, fear, or difficulty. The synonyms in the dictionary for courage are words like mettle, and spirit and resolution and tenacity. It all implies firmness of will and mind in the face of danger, in the threat of difficulty. We have to, in the context of this great Old Testament lesson, raise the question as to who are our heroes today. Where are they? Who are they? In public life, we have gone from profiles in courage to exponents of expediency. Who among us can have anything but a feeling of disgust as the corruption has unfolded in the operation of the airport that we have seen in the news this week, all of the cronyism operative in that place? In our neighborhoods and in our communities, have we gone from a shared sense of the common good to enclaves of self-interest that destroy the sense of community and reduce us to shouting at one another? In our quest for tolerance and some arbitrary pluralism, have we in fact become intolerant of the unique authenticity of those who believe genuinely and differ with us? In our time and in our city, is there a climate that encourages devotion to God and country? A climate that shapes the inner life, that can summon in your heart and mind the heroic dimensions that God planted in the human spirit when He breathed into us the breath of life and shaped us in His image? Now, I can raise the right questions, but I'm not sure that I can answer today all of the questions that I'm raising. But I would begin to address the issue by observing, first of all, that the villains are the ones who make the news today. Webster defines a villain as a person of uncouth mind and manners, a deliberate scoundrel or criminal, one who is vicious. Does it not seem to you that the only news we are hearing is bad news? The press say that they are on a bound to publish the news, good or bad, because the public needs to know. And I guess that's right. It is a familiar litany of woe that we go to bed by at night. And we wake up in the morning to a commentary in depth, it seems, of what has transpired during the night, the horrors of violence. And who among us cannot help but react with horror at these carjackings that have been unfolding on Atlanta's streets in the last week? A man gunned down in his own driveway as he goes home at night and his car is stolen. It's madness. It's madness. The villains are getting all of the headlines. Ted Turner, God bless him, tried to do something about that. He created a program on his network that would report only good news. And guess what? It didn't last very long because no one watched the program. We must somehow or another overcome the environment of violence and of moral ambiguity that has resulted in the chaos that is playing itself out on our streets every day. We must recapture again the courage to dare, the strength to resist the tides of prevailing trends, the capacity to say no, and the fiber to hold on for what we believe. The Duke of Wellington, when asked why his army won at Waterloo, said, "My men were able to be brave 5 minutes longer." And that's what I'm talking about, the fiber to hold on. To be a hero will not rise out of a laid-back spirit or from some timid belief. The heroic dimension that I'm trying to articulate today comes from hearts and minds that are charged with convictions, not suggestions, that are timidly being advanced. And you have to stand one day with the certainty that you will rarely move into the spotlight or share any limelight unless one day you find yourself in the right place at the right time when the opportunity comes and the man or the woman merges in God's timing with the moment of truth and find the strength to respond to it. A man stands in the door of an airplane that is sinking in the Potomac River. He stands at the door and helps other passengers remove themselves from the wreckage that is sinking out into the icy waters where there is at least the possibility of life. He stood there until he was worn out, until passengers were safe. And then he himself slipped because of the exhaustion of it and the temperatures of the water. He slipped beneath the icy water. The Sunday before that happened, that man, as I have told you before, worshiped in the pews of the Peachtree Presbyterian Church, where he was regularly in attendance. And for a brief moment, he pushed some villain off the front pages of the newspaper. So we keep looking and we keep working. It's true that the villains are making the news today, but that brings me secondly to say that the real heroes are often unseen and unknown. Ordinary people in ordinary places, keeping faith with each other, keeping faith with God, their lives rooted and lived out, consistent with commitments made and promises kept. Winston Churchill said, "Without courage, all other virtues lose their meaning." Emily Sargent wrote, "Courage is a quietness, not martial music made, born of facing up to life even when we are afraid." All of us rub shoulders every day with unseen, unknown heroes. I love to go to Washington, and at least once a year I make my way to that city. And when I'm there, unless I am under some kind of a restricted schedule, I look around at the monuments. I generally visit the Lincoln Memorial. He was our greatest president in my judgment, and read the words of some of his most famous addresses that are enshrined in that place. But the thing that inspires me the most is to go over to Arlington and watch the changing of the guard at the tomb of the unknown soldier. Let that lean a bit against you a bit. The unknown soldier. Those countless men and women who on some lonely beach, on some foreign shore, gave his or her life that we might be free. I remember as a boy seeing a picture in Life magazine. It seared itself into my memory of a soldier, an American soldier, lying face down in the lapping surf of some South Pacific island. And I knew instantly the cost of being free. Unknown are the heroes, unseen, unnamed. It takes courage, courage to be a parent today, meeting the demands of home and family and carpools and homework and church activities, all of the things that go with being a parent. You may be standing by a hero in the checkout counter at the local grocery store. You may be standing by a hero as a faithful minister or a priest confronts you in a hospital corridor late at night, seeking to bring solace and comfort to a grieving family or hope to a person who is quite ill. Never in the news, but a hero who keeps the commitments of godliness and cares for God's people. That man or the woman you see riding the MARTA train downtown with you every day may be a hero, keeping their vows of faithfulness at the marketplace where the fires of competition burn so brightly and where the temptation to capitulate to lesser values are so real. There they are, resisting the promiscuous climate and lifestyle of our day, trying to do what's right. An unknown, unnamed, unseen hero. It takes courage to face the challenges of life. Courage to get married and to stay married. Courage to be a single parent. Courage to believe in God. Courage to be faithful to your church. Courage to wait on the kingdom of God in a world where life and marriages and churches and schools and families and people don't turn out the way you hoped they would. It takes courage to live and cope right where you are. A person observing a roller skating race talked to the winner. It was a brief conversation. "How did you learn how to skate?" And she said, "By getting up every time I fell down." That's what I'm talking about. The courage to continue. Christina Rossetti put it this way. Does the road climb uphill all the way? Yes, to the very end, she wrote. Does the day's journey take the whole day long? From morn to night, my friend, she wrote. It takes faith to deal with the everyday realities of life. We live in a throwaway society. So many of our relationships are temporary and disposable. The average American moves every 5 years. Vance Packard said that we are a nation with our roots in midair. The breakdown of the American family is well known. Half of our children are being reared in single-parent homes. More than half of the school population changes every year in Los Angeles. We are a people on the move. We are moving, searching, hoping. And we act disposable in this disposable society. Since we often feel we do not belong anywhere, we act all of that out in all kinds of unacceptable behavior. It is into this vacuum that the Church of Jesus Christ has been called to care for people and to be shapers of the future. And when you're discouraged, something comes along that adds light to your day. A boy named Douglas checked into a Chicago hospital where he was to be treated for leukemia. Surrounded by the paraphernalia of medicine, he was discouraged. And his mom and dad thought they should do something to cheer him up, so they ordered him a beautiful floral arrangement. And it was a thing of beauty. They had said to the florist, "We want you to make something special." And when it came, it was beautiful. But it had two cards on it. One, obviously, was from his mom and dad. And they said, "Doug, we are thinking about you and praying for you, and we love you." The other was from a young woman named Laura Bradley. Douglas's parents didn't know who in the world she was. Douglas himself did not know who she was. But then he read the card that she wrote. "I took your order here at the shop. I work at the flower shop every other day. I had leukemia when I was 7 years old. I'm 22 now. Good luck. My heart goes out to you." And for the first time since he entered the hospital, Douglas brightened up and was inspired. And he began to believe that he could in fact beat the dread disease. In a hospital filled with millions of dollars worth of the most sophisticated medical equipment, he was being treated by doctors and nurses with expertise, but it was a sales girl from a flower shop who took the time to care, to connect her heart with her hands, and she gave a boy named Douglas some hope. She was a hero to me that day. You know, I wish you could experience, as I experienced as the pastor of this church, the heroic dimension of many of the members of this church. I had a funeral yesterday for a young woman, 33 years old. She died and left a 3.5-year-old little boy. Her death was one of those sudden and unexplainable things. And she was a loving human being. I saw her 2-3 times a week as she came by the church. She had indicated on her driver's license that when she died, she wanted any of her organs that could be used to be given for transplantation. And in a matter of hours after her death, her heart was beating in the chest of a 35-year-old man who would have died, the doctor said, over the weekend if he had not received that heart. Her eyes were being used by a person who had lost most of their sight from a diabetic situation. You see what I'm talking about? She had within her the willingness, God bless her, to give herself away. And you're not going to learn how to live, friends, until there wells up in your heart and mine the capacity to get in touch with this dimension that God put in the human breast. The villains are in the news, make no mistake about it. The heroes are often unknown and unseen and unnamed. But that brings me thirdly to the reality that every one of you, I can, you can be a hero. Everyone around that evening campfire could have slipped away and fought their way through the Philistine lines to respond to the reminiscing of an aging king that had brought his nation to the brink of their golden age. But only three responded. What are we giving our lives to anyway? Somewhere recently I read a quotation from Helen Keller. She said, "No pessimist ever discovered the secret of the stars or sailed to an uncharted land or opened a new heaven to the human spirit." What was she saying? She was saying that negative people never make a difference. You don't make a difference by going through life and walking around the community objecting to everything that you see. Life is not captured when you approach life in the objective mood. Life is captured when you believe something with enough passion that you will act upon that belief when the moment comes. What has happened to your New Year's resolutions? Have you thought about them lately? You see, a New Year's resolution isn't worth diddle if you don't act on it. And it's true that the road to hell is paved with good intentions. What is required to be a hero? Just three or four things. Loyalty. Loyalty to something greater than self. Courage. The courage to summon the moral conviction at the moment when the conviction is needed. Have you reread Huck Finn's adventures of late? There's a lot of good things in Huck Finn. He comes to a moment of moral crisis over his friend, the slave, Jim. It was a bad thing. Social pressure mounted in terms of how you reacted or related to a slave in Huck's society. And he was told in his church that you would go to hell if you had any dealings with hiding a slave. But then there was Jim, who was a human being of a different color. And Jim was his friend. And Jim would take his watch at night so Huck could sleep a while longer when they both ran away. And so Huck is trying to sort all of that out. He is trapped between the social message of his society that hiding a runaway slave meant hell and his desire to protect his friends. And when he sorted it all out, this is what he said, "All right, I will go to hell for Jim." That's what it takes. Courage to bring the conviction to the point of action. It also takes sacrifice. Read some of the great patriotic hymns. "Who more than self their country loved and liberty more than life." Sacrifice. The kind of courage I'm talking about rises out of a grateful heart. "Breathes there the man with soul so dead that never to himself hath said, this is my own, my native land." Aren't we grateful enough for something to act? Well, I think the sum and substance of it all rises out of two fundamental convictions. A hero is an individual who takes an extraordinary action producing a positive outcome. And when you say that, you realize that we are making heroes of the wrong people in this society. We are defining celebrity as heroic. Now, you can be a celebrity and never be a hero. You can be well known and never ever come in connection with the heroic dimension that I'm talking about. For example, do you consider Michael Jackson a hero? He's a celebrity. Or Madonna, a heroine, or Woody Allen? All of them are talented and well known, but they're not heroes. Michael Jordan, whose basketball is a symphony in motion, he's not a hero. He's a great athlete, but not a hero. The other fundamental ingredient for the heroic dimension is virtue. Virtue. This is the critical dimension that undergirds behavior. Real heroes are acting from a standpoint of virtue. Honesty, honor, love, compassion, loyalty, responsibility, duty, sacrifice. These are the things that undergird heroic action. Not self-aggrandizement, not ego satisfaction, not greed, anger, or intolerance. And the greatest virtue of them all is to love your neighbor as you love yourself. And this comes only when you love God with all your heart, your mind, and your soul, and your strength. A story and a song, and I'm through. One of the most moving spiritual moments of my life came in the Canterbury Cathedral in England. One Saturday afternoon, I took a train and rode to Canterbury, and there entered that great place where for 1,000 years Christians have worshipped, and heard a boys choir sing in the evensong service, and sat in that place where the ghost of ancient splendor stir. And while there I became acquainted with Margaret Sparks, now in her mid-70s. She had grown up in Canterbury and always loved the city and the cathedral. She is an accomplished archaeologist and has written many books about the city and its history. And she tells the story of the dark nights of 1942 when the German bombers swept over England, bombing everything that was of any value, and they were trying to zero in on Canterbury Cathedral. They shrouded the cathedral, hoping to make it not visible for the bombs and the bombing sites from the planes. But something else happened. Some men in the city, with baskets, took to the roof of the cathedral, determined to catch in those baskets the incendiary bombs that rained down from the heavens. And they did it. And out in the village of Canterbury, people were saying, they are insane. Why would they do that? I can tell you why they did it. And when the war was over, the cathedral stood virtually undamaged. When all around it was rubble, it stood because men with baskets to catch bombs took to the roof. And why did they do it? It was their conviction that the Christian faith needed to survive as an enduring witness of power and truth in that place, and were willing to pay the price for its survival. I wonder, if there is a member of this church who would take to this roof with a basket to catch a bomb. If there isn't, God help us. Near the top of the charts is a song with a one-word title today. The title is Hero. Mariah Carey wrote the song. You ought to listen to it. Lord knows dreams are hard to follow, she writes, but don't let anyone tear them away, for there will be tomorrow in time. You'll find the way. And then a hero comes along with the strength to carry on, and you cast your fears aside, and you know you can survive. So when you feel like hope is gone, look inside you and be strong, and you'll finally see the truth that a hero lies in you. Have you gotten in touch with the hero inside of you? If you haven't, you haven't begun to live. And if you don't, you never will. We give thanks, O God, for these moments together. Send us forth to find the hero that lies in each of us.